The Gemara begins in Vav Amud Aleph, quotes a statement of Rabbi Yehuda that we saw in yesterday's daf, that if a person found a field that was marked off as having a kever, a mace, somewhere buried there, and they didn't know exactly the nature of this field, so Rabbi Yehuda said that the entire field is going to be metame ba'oel until they either ad shei hesham zaken of Talmud, until they find a person who was older who remembered historically what had happened in this field, or a Talmud Chacham who knew exactly how to interpret the markings, and the fish ain't a kol b'kim b'davar, because you can't just trust anybody in regards to these matters. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda said. So Gemara says, Amar Abaye says, we learn from Rabbi Yehuda, Shema mina tzurba mirabanan, dika b'masa, kol mili d'masa ale ramya. Very important halacha. When it comes to the Talmud Chacham, a tzurba mirabanan, a very young Talmud Chacham who lives in the city, he's not only responsible for knowing all the halacha of the city, he has to know all the other matters of the city related to it, including the base kvaros and the business and the marketplace. He needs to know all the matters of the city in order to properly be the leader of the city. Very important halacha. And Gemara says, Amar Yehuda, Matza Evan Mitzuyenes. So let's say you find a rock that has marked off, has some of that plaster on it, the white plaster on it. So, Tachda. And it's so then tachteh tame. If one stone, one rock is marked off, that tells you right below this rock is where the mace is buried. That's where the tum is. Let's say you find shtaim, two rocks that are marked off. Im yesh sid b'neim, if the sid, plaster is between them, so then on the ground, then Rashi explains. I think Rashi explains that if it's between them on the ground, so then beinam tama, that means between these two rocks is the tuma, but not below the two rocks. Vim ein sid beinam, if there's no sid between them, then the halacha is it's only on the rocks. Halacha is beinam tahor, between them it's tahor, but below each rock independently is going to be tame. Vafagav, so fine. So that's what the Gemara tells us. So now the Gemara asks, Vafagav deleka charish. So is this true even though there's no charish? So is it true that if there's no sid between them, it's tahor even without planting taking place? The Hatani, the Brisa tells us, Mutz evin achas mitzuyenis, if there's one stone that's marked off, tachta tame, below that rock is tame. If shtaim, if there are two rocks that are marked off, im yesh chorish beinehem beinehem tahor. If you could tell that someone plowed through between the two rocks, it's going to be tar, but im lav beinehem tamei. But if there's no indication of any plowing taking place between these rocks, then between it's going to be tamei, even if there is no sid between the two of them. So we see from this brisa that when you have two rocks that are marked off, between it is always going to be tamei unless it's been plowed up. Before we said no, it all depends if there's cement, if there's if there's plaster between them, or if there's not plaster between them. That tells us. So it seems to be a steerus. Gemara says, Amar Papa, Hacha kisha sid shafach aroshein, umeruda lekan ulekan. We're talking about a case where the sid had spilled over on the top, and then it dripped over to each side. Now, okay. So then they say, Iika chorish beneim tar. If there was plowing between them, so then between them is now tar, because the chorisha had uprooted and crushed all the bones that may have been there. So the Amar machmas chorish hu de ikbal. And we say that since they plowed through, it's possible that the sid that had spilled over to the inside of the rocks, between the rocks, had chipped off from the plowing going through the rocks. V'lo sid b'ne b'ne hu v'tameh. If not, then the sid that's between them is going to be tameh. How do you read that last line for a second? Very technical Gemara here. Aha, okay. Okay, so that's the point. So, yes, the halacha is that if there's some of the sid between the rocks, inside the rocks, that tells us normally that there's tumah in between the rocks. But sometimes the reason why the Sid came there was not because it was intentional that the Sid had dripped in between them, but possibly from the plowing between had chipped some of the Sid on top of the rock and caused it somehow to drip below on the side of the rocks. So that tells us that if there's plowing between, that's indicative that the Sid wasn't meant to be between the rocks, but it chipped off and fell between the rocks. If there was no plowing, no one tempered with the Sid on the rocks, so then any Sid found in between the rocks was done intentionally there, and then that indicates to us that there is Tumah, in fact, between these two different rocks. And that's how to reconcile these two contradictory brises. Amar Rabbi Yassi. Rabbi Yassi says now, Meitzer Echad Mitzuyon, let's say on a certain area of land, one border is marked off with Sid. Hu Tameh, that particular border, that line, is going to be Tameh. The Cholasad, the Kula Torah, the rest of the field, however, is going to be Tahor. Shnayim, let's say two of the borders of the field are marked off. Heim Tameh, those two borders independently are Tameh. The Cholasad, the Kula Torah, everything between, it's going to be Tahor. Let's say Shlosha, three borders are marked off as becoming Tameh. Heim Tameh, those three borders alone are Tameh, but everything between, Cholasad, the Kula Torah. But let's stop, finally, we have Arba. So let's say all four borders of the field is marked off. Hain Tor and the actual borders are Tor, but Cholasa the Kula Tameya, but the rest of the field is Tame. So wait a second, before we read the next line of the Gemara, if the rocks are marked off, tells us that in between is Tame, isn't it also going to tell us that below the rocks should also be Tame? Where it says, no, below the rocks in this last situation will not be Tame. The Marmar, Ein Marchikin Tzion Mimakum Tumah Shalol Hafzid Es Eretz. So, we don't want to distance it so much from the actual Tumah. So this doesn't answer the question, though. Aha. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi explains what this line is telling us. Line is telling us, Ein marchikin tzion mimakom tumah. We don't want to distance the marker from the actual place of tumah. Ulahachi tzayin kol arba mitzarov. And for that reason, we mark off all four borders. The tehei kol sadat nitma, to indicate, to tell us that the entire sadeh is tameh. Ubitzion dimitan echad, if we just border mark off one border of the field, lo sagi l'chulo, it wouldn't be enough to tell us that the rest of the field is tameh. Dein marchikin tzion mimakom tumah. So finally, put one side of the border, that's not going to tell me anything about the other half, the other side of the field that's so far away. So that's why we need all four borders to be marked off as Tumah, to tell me what's going on in the center of it. That's what it's explaining why, again, when there's one border, why don't we say, oh, one border of the field is Tameh, so why don't we say the entire field is Tameh? Because we have the klal is, the marker can't be so distant from the actual Tumah. Okay, that concludes our discussion of marking off Tsunem when it comes to marking off Makom Tumeim in regards to a kever. The Gemara now goes on to another halacha the Mishnah told us. Mishnah told us that on Chol HaMoed they'd be Yotzin Af Al Klaim. They'd also go out and see what the any klaim, any overgrown fruits that are crossbreeding with each other and remove them. So the Gemara says, is it really true on Chol HaMoed they would do this? We're Minhu. Be'echad Be'adar Mashmim Al Klaim. Rosh Chodesh Adar, they would announce, everyone get ready, we have to start collecting machtz shekel for the upcoming year. They would also announce Val HaKalayim, they would go announce, people go check your fields and make sure no grains and fruit are growing and crossbreeding with each other. And then the Mishnah continues and says, B'chamisha Sarbo, the 15th of Adar, Korim Esa Megillah, as we know, B'krachim, the walled cities will read on the 15th, and also V'yotzin L'kavitz Esadrachim, they also on the 15th they go out and to remove any thorns that might be in the way on the roads, Ulasakin Recholos, and fix any of the streets, any of the potholes that may have came about by the long winter. Ulamud Mikvah, they measure the mikvah to make sure there's enough water. Vosim Koltzar Chirabim, and they would do all the needs the public would need. Umitzayanin Es HaKvaros, they'd also mark off the Kvaros. Vyotzin Al HaKlaim, and also on the 15th of Adar, they would go out and remove any of these overgrown fields. In the Rosh Chodesh Adar, they would announce people should start looking. On the actual 15th is when they would start pulling them out. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, Bar Chanina. So that's the question. The question is, our Mishnah tells us on Chol HaMoed, seemingly Chol HaMoed Pesach is when they'd go out to remove all the klayim. But this price, so this Mishnah tells us, no, it was actually the 15th of Adar, a month before, on Purim, is when they would remove all the klayim. So the answer is the Gemara. There's a machlok is what the answer is. Actually, no, yeah. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina had a machlokas how to reconcile these two mishnahs. Chad Amar, one of the two, Amar, Kan Bebechir, Kan Beafil. One case is talking about late bloomers, and one's talking about early bloomers. The Mishnah regarding Adar, when Purim was the time they'd remove the klaim, was referring to the fruits and grains that would grow earlier in the season that they would remove already in Purim. That's when the ones that started off earlier. But the ones that would be the late bloomers wouldn't start growing until later in Chol Hamoed, so they have to go yet a second time to double check to make sure klaim didn't grow on the late bloomers. And that's how we deal with the Mishnahs. Two types of fruits, that two different types of growths. Chad Amar, one of them said, Kan bizraim, kan birakos. No, we're talking about seeds versus vegetables. So Rashi tells us, two wide lines down in Rashi, bizraim al hatvua yotim betesvav ba'adar. The grains grow much earlier, generally, so those already start overgrowing and can produce kalayim already in the 15th of Adar, Purim. Shekodman liyarakos, they apparently grow earlier than vegetables. And the vegetables have to be checked during Chol Hamoed Pesach. Those grow much later in the season. Not much later, but a month later. And that's the difference between the two Mishnayos. Okay. Says the Gemara now, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Yochanan, Lo Shanu Ela, She'ein Nitzan Nikar. Ava Nitzan Nikar, Yotzin Alem. So our whole discussion of when we announce to people, we tell people to go check their kalayim or check the fields to make sure that there is no kalayim, it's only true when you do not see the nitzan. The nitzan isn't recognizable. So Rashi doesn't tell us what nitzan is. What's a nitzan? The sprout, I guess? Okay. So it's only true when the sprout is not recognizable. Then we say, okay, go out in Purim, go out in Chol Hamoed Pesach. But if the nitzan is nikar, the sprout is recognizable, that you start seeing the grains and the grapes growing together, and you see the new fruit produced, the whatever crossbreed that produces, so then you have to do it right away. You're not allowed to wait until Purim or wait until Chol Hamoed Pesach. Ask the Gemara, Maishna b'chol ha-shemoed dinafkinan. Why did they choose Chol Hamoed as the time that they should go out to check out the climb? Why dafka Chol Hamoed? Why not before Pesach, after Pesach? Why dafka Chol Hamoed? So Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bishim Schar Pula de Mosle Gavan. Because it's very cheap to hire workers then. People weren't working there, so they're willing to do whatever they can to make some money. So they're willing to be hired for cheaper because everyone stops working Chol Hamoed. There's Issa Melacha on Chol Hamoed. People close their businesses, so the people who need the money are not able to work. So they'll say, we'll work for much cheaper than normal. So they say, okay, great, for us, we get to do some cheaper work. Right, see, Rashi explains that schar pulo de mazle gavan, it was cheaper to hire such workers. Kolomar sheyachol lischar palin bezul. You could hire these workers for cheap. Lefish einan oskim beblacha shebechol shamar. But since no one's doing work and it's hard to find some work during this week of Chol Hamoed, people are willing to work for much cheaper. Then Amar Rav, Gemara explains, Amar Rabbi Rav Zvid, V'isheim, others say, Rav Mesharshia, Shema Amina, we learn from here, Ki Yahivna Le Tzchar Mitzumas Halishcha, Yahivna Le. We learn from this halacha that it must be who's funding the problem, who's funding the workers that they should be ripping out all the klaim. It must be coming from Mitzumas Halishcha, from the Beis HaMikdash funds. Why? Because these HaKadaitach Mididu Yahivna Le, if you think that the balabas, the farmer, is paying out of pocket, my nafkali minayu, why do we care how much it costs? Kokama debai litain lahu. He should have to give whatever it costs, whatever it takes. He has a responsibility to make sure no klaim grows in his property, so he should have to pay whatever it takes. So why do we care to make sure it's cheaper for him? So it must be that Basin stepped in. Basin realized the dangers of letting the farmers be responsible for klaim. They wouldn't do it. So Basin said, we're the ones who are going to take care of it. We're going to use the Basin Mikdash funds. Since we're tapping into the Beis HaMikdash funds, we are allowed to rely on the work in Chol Hamoed to get the cheapest possible rate to in order to save some of the Beis HaMikdash funds. Okay, the Gemara asks now, so the Ad Kama, how much? Ad Kama what? So Rashi says, last line of the Amud, Ad Kama, Havikalayim Dechayiv Levalo. So what's the point? How much klaim does it have to be growing grains and grapes together that where one has to vatel it? They have to uproot it. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel bar Yitzchak, ka'osa shishaninu, like that which we taught, kol se'a sheyesh baroveya zera miminechad miminacha yimat. So any amount of a seah, which is a certain volume of grain, that is mixed with it another species, so that's going to be a problem. You have to yimat. You have to somehow minimize it. Rashi tells us the top line of Vav and Beis, roveya hakav echad michav dal b'seah. So if 1/24 of a seah. So if you have a roveya in a seah, 1/24 of a min in another min, that's going to be a climb. You have to make sure the ratio is less. So pull out some of the other species that's going to be there, lessening the ratio from 1/24 below, and then that's permitted. So 1/24 is the shear that requires it to be uprooted. Ask the Gemara, Hatanya hiskinu shei mafkirin kol sadakula? Our Brisa says, not simply you might, our Brisa says you have to be mafkir the entire field. It's not enough to simply pull out some of the other min that's growing in there. The entire field must be mafkir. So Gemara says, Lokasha, kan kodum takana, kan la'achat takana. There are two stages. One case is before the takana, one's after the takana. Before the takana, which we'll see what the takana was in a second, before the takana they said, just yimai, just remove some of the foreign species here. And after the takana they said, we don't trust you anymore, let's be make you mafkir the entire field. So what's the different stages? The Gemara explains, the Tanya, Barishona initially, hayu okrin umashlichin lefnei behemtam. Initially what would happen, the people, the farmers, would pull out any of these fruits and vegetables and grains that were growing together, and they'd rip them out of the ground and place them in front of the animal. And the farmer was very happy. He was happy twice, double. This actually, the Beis Din had sent messengers, shluchei Beis Din, to do this. So the farmer sat back in his chair, his rocking chair. He was happy twice. Why? One was because people were working for me. I sat back. I had these workers, Shulchei Bezin, ripping out my weeds, ripping out my overgrown grains, and saving any climb. So that was one thing. And number two is Achas, Shemashlichin Lefei Bamtam. And they're also feeding my animals. Great. Excellent. Works out very nicely. Basin didn't like this. Hiskinu, Shehu Okrin, Umashlichin Al Drachim. They decided, you know what? Really, the farmers should be the ones doing this. To make basin, find the shluchim, and pay money for this, that's not right. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to pull out these overgrown klaim and throw them on the drachim. People are going to trample them. They'll no longer be edible for the animals, and you'll only have one simcha. Adayin hayusmechem simcha gadola? Shemnachshin saden? They say, okay, fine. So still, wonderful simcha. I can still sit back in my rocking chair and have basin pull out all my klaim. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, so my animals don't get any extra benefit. But still, we get the great benefit. Beis Din thought that was still inappropriate. Finally, the last stage was Hiskinu, Sheyhu Mafkirin Kol HaSadakula. They decided that they're going to be Mafkir the entire Sadeh. If Beis Din comes down and sees, I guess, that this farmer didn't do anything about his climb, their whole Sadeh is Mafkir. Beis Din has the right because of the concept Hefker, Beis Din Hefker. Beis Din has control of all Mammonis. They could say this is Hefker if that's what they want. Okay, so that's the last Brisa that said they're mafkir kol hasadakula. This is after the final stage of the final takana. Okay, so that's the new mission now. Mission says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov teaches us, Omer moshchen es hamayim me'ilan le'ilan. One's allowed to draw water, in the referring to Rashi explains, a beis hashlachim, an irrigation field, that a person can draw a little channel of water from one tree the next tree, ubilvad shel yashkes kol sata, as long as he doesn't water the entire field. Then number two, the Mishnah says, zroim shelo shasu lifnei hamoed, lo yishkem hamoed. If there was a certain grains that were not watered constantly before chol hamoed, Rashi tells us that wasn't shelo hayu mulumadim lishos tamir lifnei hamoed. These grains were not used to being watered every single day. The person can't suddenly say, oh, it's Chol HaMoed, let me start watering the grass. It doesn't work like that. Because since the grains were not used to getting water every single day, they're not going to go dry from Chol HaMoed because they're not used to getting water. It's not going to be considered a drought for them. However, Chacham Matim Zeh Bezeh, Chacham permitted both situations. They permitted you, Rashi explains, Chacham Matim Bezeh Ubezeh, L'hashkos Es Kol HaSadakula. You can water the entire tree field if you need it in Chol HaMoed. They also permitted you to water even grains that were not used to and accustomed to being watered every single day. Still, you are allowed to water the grains. And Rashi explains that Hai Chachamim, Hainu Rabbi Meir, Damar Le'el, Mashkim Imenu, Afilu Sa the Beis HaBaal. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. We saw in Daf Beis that Rabbi Meir permitted you to water an entire field, even a Sa the Beis HaBaal. Even though we said a Sa the Beis HaBaal usually has enough water, rainwater, it's not like an irrigation field, still Rabbi Meir permitted you to water the entire field. And that's the opinion here in the Chachamim. They permitted you to water both situations in the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Im Hayis Asada Mutunenes, Mutter. If the field was all very moist, and suddenly it got dry, then it's permitted. So let's look at Rashi for a second. Rashi explains, Amar Rav Yehuda, Had Amar Rav Elazar, that which Rabbi Elazar said in the Mishnah, that Avalo Yishkes Asada Kula, you're not allowed to water the entire field. That's true. Aval im ha'isasada mitunenes. If the field was a very moist lacha, it was filled with moisture, the yuvesha, and then it suddenly got dry on Chol Hamoed Pesach, was a very big heat wave in Chol Hamoed Pesach, for example, then Rabbi Elazar would agree, mutter lahashko, so then you can water the entire field. Afagav the havasada beis habal, even though it's a beis habal, not an irrigation field. The chayv and the havi lacha, since it was once very moist, aj hashta, ilom mashkala havi hipsed disera, since now it will become a Pseid Yisera. So these are all very technical situations here. The principle is that whenever there's a Pseid Yisera, a very big Davar Havada, a big loss, then you're permitted to do certain Malachos on Chol Hamoed. So that's what it all boils down to. The Mishnah where Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said you couldn't water the entire field was a talking about a situation where there wasn't a tremendous Hafsid. But Gar Gemara says if there was a tremendous Hafsid, which is an example of where it was very moist and suddenly dried up on Chol Hamoed Pesach, then one would be allowed to water the entire field, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Tani Nami Hachi, the Braisa says similarly to this, that Kishamru Asr Lahashkosim Bemoed, when we said it's Asr to water the entire field on Chol Hamoed, Lu Amru Ela Bizram, Shalosh Asum Lufne Hamoed, we're only referring to grains that were not constantly watered before Chol Hamoed. Aval Zram, the Shasu Lufne Hamoed, if it was a grain that were very used to and accustomed to being watered all the time before Chol Hamoed, then even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would be mutter, we'd say mutter, lashkosan b'moed, you can water them even in Chol Hamoed. And further says the Braisa, im hayosa, sadim mitunanes, if it was a very moist land, and I'll add in, very, then it suddenly became dry on Chol Hamoed, then even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would say mutter to water this on Chol Hamoed. So we see that from the Braisa. The Braisa continues and says, v'ein mashkin sade garid b'moed. A person may not water a sade garid. What does sade garid, Rashi tells us? A sade garid is a yuvesha me'olam ashen tarach lashkosa, a land that's always dry, there's never a heter. If it's always dry, there's no need to water it. Certainly you cannot water it on Chol Hamoed. However, comes along the Chachamim, who we've been told now by Rashi that this is Rabbi Meir. Chachamim are matirin bazeh o bazeh. They find that there's no problem, even by a dried out field, and even by a grain field that is not used to getting water all the time, Rabbi Meir permitted you to water in all situations. Okay, says the Gemara now, Amar Ravina. Ravina says, we learned from all this, Shema Mina, Hai Tarbitza, Shari, Le Tarbute, Bechol Demoad. So we learn from here that a Tarbitza, or Drash Shetel, is a Gina, a garden, is permitted to La Tarbute, Rashi says, is Lizalif Alemaim. You could sprinkle water on it. Afagav Deleka Pseida, Rashi says, even though there's no loss. The Tarbute, Rashi is Lahashkos, to water it. Why do we learn this from here? So, Rav Tosa asks this question. We just said, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that one may not water the field during Chol Hamoed. So why is Ravina coming along to say, we see from here you're allowed to water the grass? Is Ravina implying we pass like Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir says you're always allowed to water the field. Tosfos asks, he says, we follow the halacha that Mishnas Rabbi Elazar Kavanaki. Whenever Rabbi Elazar says something, it's Kavanaki, it's clear, and we always follow like him. So why is Ravina come along and say we see it's permitted to do this? So Tosfos explains that Tarvitza is a small sprinkling of water. What Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said it's also to do, it's also to water the entire field. But to sprinkle some water, you know, with a little like can, not with a hose, or but like a little sprinkling can, and you just pour some water on it, that seems to be okay. Now, I'm not sure how he derives this. I guess he's deriving from the fact that Reb Elazar says you can't water the entire field, but harshka can be done, but harvatsa, which is simply sprinkling some water, is mutter. That's where Ravina concludes from this. Gemara now wants to know, what does it mean, sadeh garid? The Mishnah said, or the Gemara said, sadeh garid, which is, Rashi told us at least, was a dried out field, my taima. Or maybe was that part of the previous statement? Yeah, I'm sorry, that's part of the previous statement, okay. That, oh no, this is part of the proof. How do we know this? Because I saw the garid, my time, what's the reason why the Chachamim permitted one to water a dried out field? Now, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov didn't permit you, but the Chachamim did permit you to water a dried out field, because they're going to explain the afla mishavile harfa. Because the watering is going to cause the afla, is the very much, the late bloomers, to start blooming sooner. Hachanami afla mashavile harfa. Here too also, by you sprinkling some water on the vegetables, that's going to cause the late bloomers, the vegetables that are normally late bloomers, to start growing earlier. So it sounds like Ravina is holding really like Rabbanan, not according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. Seems like there's a big discussion here in Tosfos how to interpret this line of the Gemara. Okay, there's a big discussion here. Okay, so we'll just go with what we just explained. So it's permitted to sprinkle. You can water a garden on Chol HaMoed, because it's no different than watering a dry field. All it really does is helps whatever grains are there to grow quicker. Mar says, now, Tanur Rabbanan, Marvitzin Sadeh Lavan B'Shvi'is. Now we're moving on to the halachas of Shvi'is. Up until now we've been discussing Chol HaMoed. Now we're back to Shemitah. So it says, Marvitzin Sadeh Lavan B'Shvi'is. Sadeh Lavan, we said before, was a white field, literally, which is a field of grains. Rashi tells us particularly a field of grains at the base of Baal that does not have irrigation channels, that is watered from the rain. So one is allowed to water Sadeh Lavan during Shviz. Avalo b'moed, but Chol HaMoed, one may not water Marvitzin, we said was sprinkling water. That cannot be done in Chol HaMoed. But the Gemara says that Braisa taught us, Marvitzin bein b'moed bein b'shviz. One is allowed to do harvatsa. One could do sprinkling of water, either whether it's Chol HaMoed or Shviz. So we see it's permitted in Chol HaMoed. Amrav Huna lokasha ha Reb Elazar ben Yaakov harban. This is the machlokas. The Braisa that said harvatsa is aser in Chol HaMoed, that's according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. The Braisa that says it's mutter to sprinkle on Chol HaMoed, that's referring to the opinion of the Chachamim. Tani idach, there's yet another Braisa that tells us that Marvitzin sadeh lavan erev Shviz. You're allowed to sprinkle water on the white field and the grain field only during Erev Shviz, the sixth year, Kadesh Yatsu Yirakos B'Shviz, in order that vegetables will produce during Shemitah year, but not during Shemitah, only Erev Shviz. V'lo, not only that, Ayla, Shemarvitzin Sadeh Lavan B'Shviz, the second half of the Brisa tells me you could even do it during Shviz, Kadesh Yatsu Yirakos L'Motzai Shviz, the end of the seventh year, one's allowed to also sprinkle some water on these grain fields in order that it can produce wheat on the year after Shviz. So we see from here that above, it sounds like a machlokas. Above we said it sounded like one could water the grass during the entire year of Shemitah. The second Braisa argues and says, no, it's only allowed to be done Erev Shviz, or it can be done the end for the purpose of Motzai Shviz. But during the rest of the Shemitah year, for the produce of the Shemitah year, that seems to be also according to the second Braisa, while it seems to be mutter according to the first Braisa. Okay, it says the new Mishnah. Mishnah says, Tzadin Yirakos Ha'ishus, sorry, Tzadin Es Ha'ishus Ves Ha'achbar, Misad Ha'ilan, Umisad Ha'lavan, Kedarko B'moed U'Bushvis. Says the Tanakhama, one is allowed to do Tzad, he could capture, he could hunt, set up traps, for Ishus, we'll see what Ishus means in a second, the Gemara is going to tell us, and Fachbarm, Chmarmer, like mice, rodents, and you're allowed to set up traps to protect these your fields, your grain fields, your tree fields, so that these animals do not ruin your produce. And it could be done in the normal fashion. You could set up a normal trap for these things, whether it be Chol Hamoed or whether it be Shavuos. Chachamim Omrim, Misada Ha'ilan Kedarko. When it comes to a tree field, you could set up a normal trap. However, when it comes to Misada Lavan, a grain field, Shelo Kedarko, you could only set up a trap in a Shinoi, a non-typical way of trapping. Okay, further says the Mishnah, Umakrin Es Hapirta B'moed, Vushrius Bona Kedarko. When it comes to a pirta, if let's say there's a breach in the fence, so one is allowed to fix it in Chol Hamoed through Makrin. Makrin is some temporary way of fixing the fence. Chol Hamoed, you can't do work. But Shavuos, however, a person can build it regularly. I'm always going to explain this, but just look at Rashi for a moment. Rashi says, in Uvashvius Bona Kedarko, Mitchila, you're out there build it, fix the fence completely on Shavuos. Even though it appears as if you're protecting, and you're being shomer, you're watching over your fruit, and the lacha during Shavuos is that your fruit has to be hefker, has to be available for everybody, and you're building up this fence, sounds like you're enclosing it and cutting off from people, that's permitted during Shavuos. So I believe the Achronim ask, wait a second, why is this mutter? Your field has to be open, your gates have to be open, how are you allowed to build the fence? So I think they explain is that, no, you still have your gates open, but the rest of the fence open. The door is open. But you don't want the entire... No one says you have to knock down all your fences and leave your field completely exposed. It has to just be accessible. So yes, your gate is open in the front, but the side of your fence broke down, you're allowed to build that regularly. Even though it looks like you're enclosing your entire fence, since we know you're not enclosing it, you're just fixing that part of it, but the front gate's open, that's why it's permitted. So Gemara is going to discuss the halachas of trapping and the halachas of building fence. I'm going to get to until tomorrow. The Gemara says, "My ishus. What is an ishus? What kind of word? What kind of animal is an ishus?" So Amar Rav Yehuda, "Burya, a creature she'ain lo einayim, that has no eyes." Okay. So look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Burya she'ain lo einayim, v'chofer pekarka, it digs." So imagine the article says a mole, right? So it's a mole. A mole is known to be, legally blind. It can't see very well. It could see, but very, very poor eyesight, I believe. So it's considered, basically, it has eyes, but it can't see very well. So that's why it says, Ein Lo Einayim, it doesn't have the ability to see very well. So that's so it's referring to a mole, and we know moles dig through the ground, they dig through properties, they dig through farms, and they eat and ruin the produce. So that's what Ishus means. Amar Rava Bar Yishmol, Visema Rav Yemar Bar Shlamya, Mikra. What's the pasuk? What's the pasuk that tells me that the word Ishus refers to this mole? They quote a pasuk, I believe it's in Tehillim. Kimo shablul tamam, yaloch nafel eshes bal chazu shemesh. So, Rashi explains, what does it mean, dechsev kimo shablul tamas yalech? Shablul shakorn limtun tamas yalech. Kulomar, kishyotze chutz minar tiki, riros nofos imenu adshu nimuach umes. So it's referring to, I believe, a snail. So if a snail, a shovel is a snail, so if it leaves its shell and all the slime, if you will, I'm not sure the technical term for it, but the slime begins to fall out until it melts and dies. That's the first half of the pasuk. And then, Nafal Ashes Baal Chazu Shemesh, says Rashi, Kumar Kach Isha, so to a mole, Noflos pitom laaretz umesim delo chazu. They'll suddenly start crawling and fall in a pit or something and fall on the ground and just die because they can't see where it is. So that's, again, what the context of the pasuk means until I'm not sure. But we see from this pasuk that the referring to an ashus is one who bal chazu shamash, who cannot see the sun. So we see that it refers to a mole. Back to the Gemara now. Tanur Rabbanan. Tzadin esa ishus vesachbarn. You could trap these moles, you could trap these mice and other types of rodents. Misada halavan, from a grain field, misada ha'ilan, from a tree field, kedarko. And you're allowed to do this in the normal fashion of setting up traps. Machriven chori nimalan, and you could also destroy all the ants. If you see ant holes coming to take away and attack your produce, you're allowed to destroy them as well. Gemara wants to know, well, wait a second, ketzad machriven, how does one, what's the proper method and technique of destroying ant holes, and ant mountains, ant hills? The Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, maybe afar michorze. V'nosein letoch achor zeh. You take dirt from one hill and you place it in the other hill. You switch the dirts. V'chonkin zeh zeh, and they begin to choke each other. Rashi explains, chonkin zeh zeh, v'pnei shemarichin es ha'ofar. They smell the afar. Vein makirin bosa of afar. They don't recognize the smell and begin to get all nervous, and they have this whole fight and they kill each other. So Amar of Yemer, Abar Salmiya, Mishmei De'abaye, V'hu De'kai B'tre Avri Dinara. Mar gives some good advice how to properly deal with your field. So it doesn't work if you have two ant holes next to each other. It's not going to work. It has to be where the two ant hills are separated on two sides of the river, where they completely, the smell of the dirt is completely different. And further, has to be V'hu De'leka Gisha. There can't be a bridge that is crossing that the ants can go back and forth to and recognize the dirt. And further, Hudileka Gamla, that can't either be a not quite a bridge, but it's more of a board that or log, let's say, that crosses over, because an ant could cross the board as well. And also Hudileka Gamla, that can't be a Gamla either. A Gamla, Rashi tells us, Gisha was a bridge, Gamla was a board. Hudileka Matza, there can't be a Matza, which is a tiny little twig or maybe a tiny little string or something, another way that ants are able to cross. So it can't be any way that the ant can cross from one to the next. So the Gemara says, Ad Kama, what's the distance between these rivers? Rashi says, Ad Kama, top line is, Muchakin Hani Tre Chari Nimal, and how far do these two ant hills have to be from each other? The Chi'ika Nara Benai, when there is a river between them, Veleka Gishra, and there is no type of crossing. If you have like a piece of land and there's a river, so it's very possible the dirts are still going to smell like. There still has to be a distance, even though there's a river, and even though there's no bridge, there still has to be a distance. What's that distance? Ad parsa, if there's a distance of a parsa, and all the other criteria is met, then you could take the dirt from one anthill, walk to the other anthill, and that's going to cause them to choke each other, kill each other, and save your produce. Okay, so we'll stop here. I think it's a bit early.